We are going to continue our series on War of Desires, and it's been really encouraging to hear the stories of people chatting about this in their hubs, and I heard about hubs scrapping their material just so they can talk about this. I know it's been great conversations in the pubs, And one of the things that I've loved asking people is, you know, what's your big one? When Pete put the list up, like, which one made you sweat? Which one made you feel uncomfortable when you saw it? And we had some great conversations off the back of it. And when Pete asked me to speak a couple of weeks ago on comfort, I have to say, inwardly, I was slightly rejoicing and feeling very smug because he hadn't nailed me on my biggie. And that one had gone to Tim. But then I got a call into Pete's office on Monday afternoon, and which I always feel like I get really, really nervous about, which means I've probably got some sort of guilty conscience. He's going to tell me off about something. And everything kind of slowed down as he said, Anna, Tim, it still isn't 100%. I was wondering if you could talk about status. And then this happened. Followed by this in the office. I turned to Karis and I said, Karis, I'm perspiring at the thought of doing this. So when I'm speaking tonight, I want you to hear that I'm speaking out of my brokenness. It means that on the good side, there's going to be things that I'm going to get to speak about, which I speak about with authority because I've been through a dogfight of myself. But also there's aspects where I'm going to talk about things and it's like revealing the ugliness of my heart. And it's pretty embarrassing, particularly when you have someone like Pete James get up and say, like, my issue is self-sufficiency. You know, I never want to upset anyone. I just care about people too much. I just want to help everyone. And I'm just like, oh, boo-hoo, you miserable sinner. Because here I am, I care about myself. It's all about me. Anyway, underneath this this thing of status is this desire for significance. And as we've said, with all of these desires, it's not that they're bad desires, these are good desires. But the key question is, where are you pointing it? Are you pointing it to the rival kingdom, or are you pointing it to the kingdom of God? And this is significance is something that's hardwired into all of us. You can't help but read Genesis 1 and 2 and think that God didn't make human beings to be significant. When he said that he made us in his image and likeness, that means he made us pretty significant. And like Pete talked about last week, but what happens is that we start snatching for significance. We start grabbing at significance from other places, not trusting that we can actually get it from God. And that's when what draws us towards this rival status is this is this pursuit of status. And there's two ways we can talk about status. And the first one is that we could talk about the status that we're born with. And that kind of comes into privilege and race and class. And Pete is going to tackle that in a couple of weeks' time. So I'm not going to talk about that today. But what I want to talk about is the status that we go after primarily by our own actions, like needing titles, needing self-importance, needing people to be impressed by us, needing to be amongst the right people, needing to have a good number of social media followers, needing to have people like our stuff on social media, all of that stuff that says depends, it's like depending on our external environment to give us the significance that we need. Significance is essentially looking for validation from others. I was talking to Gav about it, and he said, it's when you look in someone's eye and you see yourself reflected back and you think, yeah, I'm impressive. You see that, and that's what you're longing for. That's what, almost like what you're addicted to. And there are five things that I think that drive our behavior as we pursue status. And these aren't five things that I've just plucked out of the air. I wish I had. But they come from like a personality thing. Of basically, what are the needs that drive us as human beings? What are the fundamental needs that we have that if they go unchecked, again, they're not bad things, but if they go unchecked, that they can end up leading us towards snatching at things and grabbing at things. And the first one is safety. There's some people that you'll be wired towards like looking for safety in a room, in an environment, in a relationship. And it relates to status because you're often you'll be looking for safety in relationships. And you start projecting status. You start looking for that respect from your boss because you're nervous that you might lose your job. So if you have status there, you feel safe. So you start acting in a way in which it will give you that safety. And there's others that are, have this longing, this need for attention. You need the conversation to be on you. You need the focus to be about you. You long for the crowd. You long for people. It all to be about you. And status for those sort of people is basically a way of securing that attention. Like if I have status, then I know that I'm going to be getting that attention. And this kind of links in with how we do our relationships as well, that People who are longing for status or looking for status or will often be pursuing like the inner circle, the inner relation, the inner ring, as C.S. Lewis calls it. And I know we often will, like in a community like this, there will be what we perceive as cliques. And actually, sometimes when we have an issue with cliques, I want to challenge you that maybe what's actually really going on is there's a friendship group that you just want to be a part of. And you feel like it's not that you haven't got friends, it's that you're not in the right friendship group. And actually, friendships are really important, and it's right and it's healthy that I have deep friendships with certain people and not with everyone. That I have a few people in my life which I'm really honest with, and that is a healthy thing. And sometimes we can perceive that as exclusion, and I just think it's really important that we're aware of that, because as C.S. Lewis says, if we're governed by the desire to be a part of that inner group, you'll never get what you want. You're trying to peel an onion. If you succeed, there'll be nothing left. Until you conquer the fear of being an outsider you will remain, because you will always be, there will always be another inner group. There will always be someone else. There will always be another group that you need to belong to. And also, there's people that will have a need for power, this need to feel powerful. And the people that long for power is basically what's driving it is this fear of being controlled or manipulated, that you need to be the one that's exerting power because you fear being controlled and manipulated. And therefore, if you pursue power, you see status as a way of kind of like shielding you. It's a way of saying, you know, I have power. You hide behind positions and titles. And one of the things, the tragic things that happens with this type of person is that relationships then start to become commodities. Like a relationship with someone is that actually you're just using them as a stepping stone to get to the next person, to the next person. Fourthly, the need for approval. And this type of person, they need to gain approval. And you'll know you're one of these people because you need to be needed by people. You have this desperate need that you have to be needed by people. You're like the martyr that kind of like passive-aggressively bleeds over everyone, telling them how much you're doing for everybody. And because, you know, things couldn't function if you weren't there. And you get your status by being needed. And finally, success. And these people, they fear failure, and status for them is a sign of achievement. This person hides behind their vulnerability behind success, and they project achievement, they project status as a way of saying, look how successful I am. Look how good I am. And the problem with all of this is it's exceptionally fragile. All these things that we grab at, whether it's security, being with the right friends, the right people, the titles, the positions of power, the need to be needed, success, achievement, all of these are exceptionally fragile. And it leaves us in this place of status anxiety, because any of these things might slip away from our grasp. And once again, we're snatching at life, we're snatching at significance, we're snatching at things with no reference to God, longing for the adoration of people, whether it's the crowd or the select few, hoping that we'll get that sense of significance through our status. And what actually happens is that we end up secure, because our success rests, our status rests on really insecure things. Jobs disappear, titles disappear, success isn't guaranteed. People are fluctuating. Someday someone's going to be really nice to you, and then another day they may not be because they're having a bad day. Some people might want to be in their pattern group, but they've already got a pattern group. So you're left feeling incredibly insecure because you're not part of their inner circle. Therefore, you start distorting your friendship and start thinking that you're not even friends. And it leaves us in this insecurity where our view of ourselves and our relationships become distorted. We start to think, actually, like, you know, I'm not the best person at my job. And you start to think, I'm just terrible. Your worth plummets. And we work out based on marital status, jobs, looks, earnings, anything. Work out around the people around us, like, where is my status? And we're constantly questioning, like, where am I standing? And the problem with that is that there's always going to be winners and losers. And one day you might be the winner, and then the next day you might not be. And I've been told, well, I knew myself, but my friends have confirmed, my close friends have confirmed this is my issue. And I want to share just a little bit of the last couple of years with you. And I want to say, for those in the room who you're actually feeling cripplingly insecure at the moment, and I also want to share it for the people in the room who right now, if you're finding your identity in the things that you're doing, and right now it kind of feels great. It feels like you've felt maybe a slightly inflated ego about yourself. But I just want to speak into it because all of this stuff, it's very, the things that we're longing for are feeding our significance. It's very insecure. And 4 years ago, I would have told you, I probably actually would have boasted to you that I'm an incredibly secure person. I was working at a church in Exeter. I loved the city. I worked in a great church. I loved the leaders. I'd gone there when I was about 25 to work with 14 to 24, 21-year-olds. And the job had gone well. And slowly, it had grown to looking after 4 to 21-year-olds and starting a leadership development course. So things were looking pretty good for me. And I was actually getting all my three biggest needs met. I had attention, like I was preaching and leading regularly, and that's not to say that preaching and leading are a bad thing, but when you start getting your status, when you start getting your significance from those things, that's when it becomes toxic. And I was leading, you know, kids and youth and students, so I was getting my fill of attention. I had power, I was part of the leadership team, I felt like my voice had value, I was being brought into like strategic conversations. And looking back at it, thanks to my excellent line manager, she made me look really good. So I was experiencing a measure of success, and I was pleased with what I've achieved, and other people were pleased with what I had achieved. I was feeling good. I was feeling secure. And like I said a few weeks ago, behind the scenes, like things weren't actually all that great because I was doing things like praying more in public than I actually was in private. My relationship with God had started to shrink and shrivel. So things weren't healthy, even though I appeared secure. And then I moved to London, and I started training for ordination, and I started working for a church. And rather than a church of 200, it was a church of like 2,000. And rather than a staff team of about 8, it was a staff team of about 200, 250. And what I'm about to say is absolutely no reflection on the church itself, and it's entirely a comment on who I am and the way I approached it and what was going on in me. And actually, I can only see this stuff by looking back at my story. At the time, I couldn't see it. It's only when I stand with the benefit of hindsight that I can look back and I can see what was actually going on. I can map it out. But I wasn't getting my attention. I wasn't getting the attention that I was used to. Like stupid things like not being on the church website. Like it bothered me. I'd walk into church and no one knew who I was, and they didn't really care even when I said who I was. And for the first couple of months, it was a real gift because I got to worship with it being anonymous, but then it started to just erode me and erode me and erode me. And I didn't have any power. I wasn't being invited into the inner circle. No one was seeking my opinion on the strategic direction of the church. I didn't have any success. I didn't have anything to say like, this is mine. In the space of a few months, an apparently incredibly secure person became desperately insecure. I felt utterly worthless and totally useless. My sense of self just got completely distorted and my confidence was shattered. And why did it happen? It happened because my significance had solely been linked to my status. I'd become addicted to attention, power, and success. It had become about me. It had become about my needs and my name. I got seduced by the lie that I was only worth what was my status was. It had become my idol, and it crushed me. And that's when you realize how fragile these things are. And then I met Pete Hughes, and I thought, well, he's a mediocre leader. He can make me look good. And you could call my story a bit like this. But the truth is, you know, I came to KXC feeling incredibly fragile. And in fact, in my interview with Pete and B, there was one point when Pete asked me, he's like, you know, what are your gifts? And I don't ever recommend this, saying this in an interview. They were very gracious. I said, I just don't know anymore. I just don't know. I'd completely lost sight of who I was. And the last 2 years have been a process of rebuilding. And it was actually only in my last line manager's meeting with Pete James when I think I'm remembering who I am again. I think parts of me are coming alive again. But this time around, I want to do it differently. I want Jesus rooting me. I want Jesus telling me who I am. I don't want to follow his call on my life and let go of him. It took so little to shake me, not being on a church website. It took so little to knock my confidence. But seriously, when I say the thing that's driving anyone who's longing for status, the question is, am I loved? With all of this stuff, it's just like, am I loved? Do people love me? Am I lovable? Title, success, being in the right circle is all just a cry for love. Alan de Botton, which if he changed one letter in his name would be really funny, but still funny. He's not a Christian, but he identifies it. He said, once food and shelter have been secured, the predominant impulse behind our desire for success in the social hierarchy may not lie so much with the goods that we can accrue or the power we can wield as with the amount of love we can stand to receive as a consequence of high status. Money, fame, and influence may be valued more as tokens of and a means to love rather than the ends in themselves. Love me, love me, love me. I want to be loved. I want to be adored. I want your love to make me significant is essentially what we say as we pursue these things. And when Pete said on the first week, he asked us, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but he said, aren't you bored of being insecure? And my aunt says, yes, I'm so bored of being insecure. And the only way we're ever going to know that we are actually loved is when we direct that desire for significance into the right direction, towards the kingdom of God. And compare my reaction to a lack of status to Jesus. In Philippians 2, it says, who, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used for his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by being obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest places and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. Every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Jesus didn't need status to be significant. And I find him absolutely fascinating for that reason. It's like for someone like me, I'm drawn to him because I'm like, how is it that you can be so secure in yourself, that you can take on the form of a human, that you can be made in human likeness, and that you can be obedient to death, even death on the cross, and still you're secure in your significance. And Jesus, and you see in his ministry, what starts at the beginning is the fundamental thing. When he's baptized, the Father speaks over him, this is my Son in whom I'm well pleased, before he's done anything. And it is that identity that he lives out of. And it's that the Father wants to speak over us again and again and again, if we're willing to listen, so that we can live out of that identity, that our significance comes from the fact that we are children of God. And he's so pleased with us before we've even done anything. And Paul encourages us to take the attitude of Jesus. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset of Jesus Christ. He calls us to have the same mindset of Jesus Christ, to take on this identity of being a servant to people around us. Because those who serve know that their status doesn't come from what they do, but it's actually who they are. They don't pursue a name for themselves. And they choose to value others even higher than themselves. And what does that look like? Well, how can we even begin to practice having the mindset of Jesus? I just want to give three ways that we can do that, ways we can pursue it. And the first one is serving. I'd love to take you to a passage in John 13, but we haven't got time. But I'm just going to briefly explain it, where Jesus, again, he's just totally compelling and fascinating. It says that Jesus knew the Father had given him all power and authority. So then he takes the position of a servant, and not just a servant, but the lowest servant would have done the job of washing people's feet. And he sits there and he washes their feet, his friends' feet, even the feet of his betrayer. And then he invites his disciples to do the same. He invites us to do the same, to do the jobs that no one else wants to do, to serve people when no one else wants to serve, to get our hands dirty and serve people, because actually we live out of that identity, that we aren't defined by what we do, and that even we can take on, just do the worst jobs and still know that we're loved. And for some of them, the best thing you can do for your discipleship at the moment is actually to join a setup and a pack down team, because you actually know you need to kill this thing in you. And I tell you what, it's been a total gift for me over the years of having to, of learning to serve. I was really fortunate that quite early on in my discipleship, like, I just had people alongside me saying, "Oh, you have to serve. You have to do those jobs." And it brings that offense in me still. I'm still got that arrogance in me that I don't want to do it. But it's just such a gift to me. I know it is. And I tell you what, learning to discipline yourself to be someone who serves will make a difference with your colleagues. It'll make a difference with your family and friends, your family, as you start to value them higher than you value yourself. Serve them, taking on the mindset of Jesus. And the second thing, encouragement. And I won't go too much into this because we have a pattern podcast for that. Fear not. And also, just a little aside, just quickly, just to say, I know some people have been listening to like a pattern podcast a day. They come with a health warning. Just don't do that. It's a terrifying thought. You'll end, like someone was saying, that they were listening to it on the way to work every morning and hit Friday and they just felt utterly depressed. But it's just like, just take one, maybe listen on repeat for a while and just get that one into your system before you go on to the next one. Anyway, that's an aside. Encouragement. Encouraging people, like, again, lifting people up with your words, like turning attention to other people, lifting them up. And like, this used to be such a foreign thing to me. I remember a friend really bravely saying to me that I used to, that she found my words really cutting. And that was a real challenge to me, because I knew that the reason I would be cutting people down was to make myself look good. So I've learned to be someone who encourages for that reason. And it still does, you know, it's starting to become more and more natural. But at first it was so unnatural. And I have this phrase of, like, just say what you see. When you see something good in it, rather than just like keeping it inside and thinking, "Oh, they did that really well," or, you know, "They look nice today," or whatever positive thing you might say, think about someone, just say it. Rather than just keeping it inside, just say it. It feels awkward. Sometimes people think you fancy them. It just gets yourself into a whole lot of trouble, but it's fun, isn't it? So encourage people. The other one, I really can't speak much about this one because I'm just terrible at it. I don't think I've ever achieved secrecy, like doing things in secret where no one else sees. I'm not very good at this. However, I did see one of my church leaders, it wasn't Pete, sorry Pete, but one of my church leaders on one Saturday morning, I think we'd had some sort of like youth-sponsored sleep out, and I saw him coming out the toilet with his marigolds on, and he'd been cleaning the toilets, and he just said to me, "Please don't tell anyone this, because it's the only way I can serve the church without them knowing." And finding ways where you can serve people, I need to start doing this, finding places you can serve this where actually it's just not about you at all. It's simply about serving in secret, whether it's doing good things for people, whether it's giving people money generously, whatever it might be, like, have a go at that. And we're desperate to find someone to do a podcast on that, but unfortunately we don't know anyone who practices it because it's all in secret. Finally, I just want to finish up with this. The answer, as we've been saying with all of this stuff, is about loving Jesus first. And that is the gift that worship is. It is, you know, whether it's here on a Sunday or in your bedroom, wherever it is, listening to headphones, worship is essentially, it isn't just about like an emotional expression of just me getting my feelings out about God. It's actually, we need to worship because we need to remember who he is. Like, God doesn't forget who he is, but we do. We so often forget who he is. And we need to remember who God is, because it's only in the presence of God, when we're seeing him rightly, do we actually see ourselves rightly. Directing our gaze towards him changes everything. It does shift something. And just want to quickly look at Isaiah 6. And Isaiah, like all the writers, will say that he was a bit of a status junkie like me. There's this passage that basically he comes into this this atmosphere of worship. And as the angels are flying around, and they're saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and the thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. Holy, holy, holy. In the Hebrew, when they would say, want to emphasize something, they would repeat it. So like, I think it's in Jeremiah, they say, when talking about pure gold, they say gold, gold, because it's like golder than gold. It's like pure, pure gold. And the only time that I think something, a description word is repeated three times is about God, when they say holy, 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 like holy, holy, like there's the holiest of holies of holy. That is who God is. And it's in this atmosphere of worship that Isaiah steps into, and his response is, woe to me, I'm ruined. I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord God Almighty. Like, this is good news to us. It might not sound it like from Isaiah's reaction, but it's good news to us, because we'll only ever believe or know that we will be truly loved when the person that loves us can see our utter brokenness and still love us. And straight after this bit in Isaiah, then God calls Isaiah and he commissions him to be his prophet. When Isaiah at his point of saying, like, woe to me, like, just, I might as well die, like, woe to me, I'm ruined, I'm a cursed man, like, I'm a man of unclean lips, when he's feeling utterly broken, God says, yeah, I'll use you, I'll take you as my prophet. And you see that again in Luke, when Peter meets Jesus. Jesus has done this amazing miracle, and Simon's reaction is to fall on his knees and say, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. And what is Jesus' response? Come, follow me. When we worship Jesus, not some God made in our own image, but the one true God, the creator of all things, the one who is truly holy, 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 who is all-powerful, almighty, full of mercy and grace and compassion, that we have to humble ourselves as we see ourselves clearer, when we become aware that actually we're not that holy, that we don't love that much. We're not as kind as him. We're not as gracious as him. We're not as powerful as him. It's like worship is like this siren, this call to our dependence upon God. And it means that there's such a freedom in God's presence, that we don't need to impress him, that we don't need to project anything to him. We don't need to project our status as if we could ever impress God anyway. But we actually just come just as we are, just as children, to be loved perfectly by him. Like, we are significant because of the one that we're loved by. And it's the only way, the only route to knowing that you're truly secure, that you're truly loved, is by coming to him in worship again and again, being in his presence, reminding yourself who your God is again and again and again.